Happy Friday, everybody. Hope everybody had a great day. Looking forward to the weekend. You're listening to Steen on Sports. We're bringing sports your way every day right here on 101.3 FM, 1700 The Champ AM, Real Sports Talk for real sports fans. As always, you can check us out on Twitter at Steen on Sports and at 1700 The Champ. Facebook's at 1700 The Champ, and the website's 1700thechamp.com. Minnesota Twins baseball starts back up after the All-Star break. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, the Twins are in Oakland. 8 o'clock, 5:30, and 2:30 are game times. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, they play the Mariners. So we're looking forward to that. As always, we look forward to talking about our sponsors of the show, Northwest Bank, Woodman Controls, Heritage Building Maintenance, and our favorite for homeless veterans, golf outing at Legacy Golf Club on Monday, July 31st, in conjunction with Shelter, Central Iowa Shelter and Services. We'll talk about that more as the day goes along as well. Hope everybody, man, it's the end of the week. Hope everybody had a great week. A lot of sports stuff going on, as always, and a lot of things to talk about. Now, you know, I sit back and I'm like, okay, you know, I'm trying to think what's the one thing I want to talk about. What's the big, you know, the big stuff that's out there, and there's a lot going on. I think the biggest couple, and let's start with Northwestern. About an hour after, my show last night, the Northwestern baseball coach, Jim Foster, has been relieved of his duties effectively immediately. That came from the family, Combe family vice president for athletics and recreation. Same type of stuff. Bullying, just not good working conditions. You know, just a lot of player mistreatment, I think, is the easiest way to say what was going on. And now I take a couple of steps back, and I think we need to start digging into this a little bit deeper than what we already have. I have a couple of high school friends, brothers, Mike and Sean Morris. I don't know for sure what Sean talks about and if he's on social media. I saw a couple of posts from Michael, who did not play sports there, but went to Northwestern as well. Sean Morris played, at Northwestern. Has been on the Big Ten Network. He's done Northwestern games. He's done all kinds of NCAA games. But, you know, just you have to start taking a look at the whole athletic department, which means that you have to take a look at the whole university, and you have to try to figure out how and why did all these things happen, and if they've been happening for a while, why wasn't it getting anywhere? And that's the difficult thing. And that's what that's one of these items, soccer players, gymnasts, now baseball teams, football teams, basketball teams. You have to start trying to wonder, why wasn't somebody in these administrations understanding that there was a problem, investigating if there was a problem, and trying to figure a way out. Secondary to this, Tennessee, this one makes your, I don't know, it made my blood boil, but I'm curious to see what other people have to think. Tennessee Volunteers, with the time that Coach Pruitt, I'm trying to see what Coach Pruitt, it's Jeremy Pruitt. He was at Tennessee, and there were over 200 violations, individual infractions committed by the school during former coach Jerry Pruitt's tenure. Among the penalties handled down, Tennessee has been placed on 5 years probation, was given an $8 million fine. $8 million, among other financial penalties that will push it closer to $9 million, and we'll see a total reduction of 28 scholarships. The $8 million fine, the NCAA said, was equivalent to financial impact the school would have faced if it had missed the postseason during the 2023 and 2024 seasons. It's believed to be the largest ever levied in infractions case. The panel said they encountered a challenging set of circumstances related to prescribing penalties in this case. The infractions committed in this decision, the panel urges the infraction process committee and its membership to clearly define its philosophy regarding penalties, which extends beyond postseason bans and memorializes that philosophy in an updated set of penalty guidelines. The NCAA will require Tennessee to vacate all wins and individual records in any game in which 16 individual sanctioned players participated in. The specific games will be announced later, but sources told ESPN that any wins that are vacated would come from Pruitt's 3 seasons as coach and not from the past 2 seasons under Josh Heupel. The Volunteers were credited for their self-imposed 16 scholarship reduction over the past 2 years and will cut 2 more scholarships this year, meaning 10 additional scholarships will be taken away over the 5-year probation period. So the NCAA was lenient on Tennessee because they took those extra 16 scholarships away. This is my issue as well. And if you've listened to this show for long enough, you understand my issues that I have with the NCAA. You understand that it's not set up to be able to cope with everything that it has to do in conjunction with making sure that all of the sports and athletic and the student athletes, everybody, they don't have enough there to make sure that everybody's safe and people are doing the right thing. For Tennessee, fining them $8 million, they still sold out football games. They went to bowl games. They receive money. They get, I mean, it's not enough. If you have these many, and from the sounds of going through this, they had no defense against any of these allegations that were put on the table. Tennessee has been charged with 18 level 1 violations, the most severe in the NCAA rule structure. In July, 22 included among more than 200 infractions were charges of $60,000 in impermissible benefits and both Pruitt and his wife Casey making cash payments to players' family. Coach Pruitt received a 6-year show cause order and would be suspended for the first full season if he's hired by an NCAA school. Pruitt, who was 16 and 19 through 3 seasons for the Volunteers, was fired for cause by Tennessee after the 2020 season and didn't receive any of his $12.6 million buyout. And also don't say then that he did get to keep the other $12.6 million of his he's been out of college or professional coaching since serving as a New York Giants senior defensive assistant in 2021. 3 other former staff members were also given show cause orders. Kay Norton, president emerita at Northern Colorado and chief hearing officer for the panel, called the violations egregious, expansive, making it one of the largest cases this committee has ever adjudicated. Because Tennessee showed exemplary cooperation after the violations were first reported through a postseason ban, was removed from the array of available penalties in this case. The committee felt the final punishment fit the crime. The panel found it was in a very difficult position as it's charged with applying existing penalties while also respecting the guidance from the NCAA member schools. Today's decision preserves opportunities for current students who were not involved in the wrongdoing to compete at the highest level during the postseason. Here's the issue with that. It doesn't stop Tennessee. This is a Tennessee Volunteer football issue. The fact that just because of the penalties didn't happen at that time, Tennessee needs to be punished for what happened. There should be today's decision preserves opportunities for current students who were not involved in wrongdoing to compete at the highest level and during the postseason. I understand that. What should happen is the student athletes at the University of Tennessee that no longer want to be there because the school cannot do any of that because the school did not stop this individual stuff from happening. I don't care. You can't blame all of this on the coach. It's a systematic thing. The Tennessee athletic program or anybody else's athletic program, their job is to make the most amount of money that they humanly possible can and try to do it in the best way in the form of what the NCAA is. And I understand Jeremy Pruitt being punished. And I understand the kids that were there being punished. It still was a systematic problem with the university, not the university. The university being in charge of the athletic department. There has to be more oversight. There has to be more rules. It did not in any way hurt Tennessee as a whole. $8 million, that Tennessee football program, even during Jeremy Pruitt's horrible run at Tennessee, made millions of dollars. With players that were illegally getting money paid under the table. It's not just a coach. This is where we get into all this. Let's jump to Northwestern. So they just got rid of Coach Fitzgerald, and they just got rid of Coach Foster in their football and their baseball programs. And for everybody out there, the university, everything, they're hoping, okay, see this? This is what we did. We went through and we took care of this. We took these two bad apples that were letting this happen, and we took them out. It's systematic in the program. This wasn't just a couple of isolated incidents of some of the things that Northwestern has had blame and caused that happened to these two coaches losing their jobs. You have to have control of your programs. That means the president of the university needs to have control of all of his programs. The athletic director has to have control over all these programs. So you're telling me that we can fire the coach for his actions in allowing this type of behavior to happen, football. You can fire the coach for bringing on some of these, it was player morale, a whole bunch of other things, And they still aren't finished with the investigation. When does that fall back upon the athletic director and the school itself? It happened with the same at Penn State with Joe Paterno and Sandusky and all of this stuff happening. And people always going saying this stuff is happening. And they're going to Joe Paterno, and Joe Paterno said, it's not like that. I'm trying to take care of this. That there has to be bigger consequences. I have less of a problem. It's still a big problem. The infractions over paying students under the table and doing all that. You know what? The NIL and all the things that we're getting ready to do have taken that type of stuff off the table. I mean, it's just not going to be talked about anymore because it's different now. But that doesn't stop from outside entities paying coaches or administrators or however. We have to figure out something to to get the to try, man, I'm trying to find some words here. You have to put integrity back into collegiate athletics. I don't even want to say the NCAA, because I do not think that the NCAA anymore in this time, in this era, has any chance of being able to manage programs as big as college football, NCAA men's and women's basketball. Start there. I think the NCAA might have, so in some of the Olympic sports might have the capability of overseeing wrestling and tennis and golf. But I don't think that they have the ability to rein in, control, or any of that. Everybody that's involved in all of this, it's all about money. These presidents, provosts, athletic directors, coaches, it's all, how can we get on TV? How can we make more money? Who can we have sponsor our stadiums? How can we gather in more money here? How can we gather more money in here? How do we get more here so we can build a bigger stadium here to bring in more people to make more money? And we've lost sight of taking care of student athletes, as it seems. And heaven forbid that we pay student athletes as much as possible with all the money that they're being made off their backs. You're listening to Steen on Sports. We're bringing sports your way every day right here on 101.3 and 1700 The Champ, Real Sports Talk for real sports fans. Welcome back in, everybody. Once again, happy Friday. Drive safely home. Hope everybody had a great week. Great weekend coming up. You're listening to Steen on Sports. We're bringing sports your way every day right here on 101.3 and 1700 The Champ, Real Sports Talk for real sports fans. Check us out on Twitter at Steen on Sports and at 1700 The Champ. We can also check out Minnesota Twins baseball tonight against the Athletics at 8 p.m. pregame. Saturday is a 5:30 pregame, and Sunday is a 3 o'clock pregame, I do believe. Inside Twins pregame comes on at 2, so I'm assuming that they play at 3. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, they play at the Mariners in Seattle. This second segment is brought to you by Northwest Bank, commitment that you can bank on, taking care of your personal, business, agriculture, private banking, wealth management, and insurance needs every day your way. Locations in West Des Moines, 2 in Ankeny, 1 in Ames, 3 locations in Omaha, and many across the northwest side of the state. Check out Northwest Bank's mobile app for ease of doing banking whenever your phone is in your hand. Go to northwestnw.bank to take advantage of applying online for various types of loans. From vehicle to mortgage, it all starts there. On the website, you can visit the newsroom for all things Northwest Bank. You also can view BizBuzz blog for their business insight, or simply use the multiple banking tools to enhance your banking experience. All this at nw.bank. Once again, don't wait and open up an account with Northwest Bank. Commitment that you can count on, member FDIC. Finished up my stuff with Northwest Bank today. Very proud and very happy. Okay, just a couple more. With Tennessee and some of the things that went through this. Tennessee officials and others, including SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey and Pruitt, were in Cincinnati for 2 days in April as the Committee on Infractions heard Tennessee's case, which ignited when University Chancellor Dondi Plowman said in November that her office had received credible tip on potential recruiting violations within the football program. A week later, Tennessee hired the law firm Bond, Schneck, and King to investigate any wrongdoing. That investigation lasted nearly a year and cost the university more than $1.5 million. She said, "I have said from the beginning that we are committed to winning with integrity. I believe we also resolved this case with integrity. Always committed to holding ourselves accountable and wrongdoers responsible while protecting the rights of student-athletes who had nothing to do with the infractions. We recognize this was a serious case and that the penalties received from the Committee on Infractions are consistent with what we expected and negotiated with the NCAA enforcement staff last year." When Pruitt was fired, Plowman had said in a news conference that she was shocked at the number of violations and the number of people involved and their efforts to conceal their activities from the compliance staff and leadership within the athletic department. The NCAA found that Tennessee had failed to monitor its football program which was the loan charge that targeted the university and not coaches and staff members. Tennessee disputed that charge. Tennessee was not accused of a lack of institutional control a year ago when the charges were announced, which lessened the potential scope of penalties, as did the school's series of self-imposed sanctions in anticipation of the NCAA ruling. Once again, none of these people that were mentioned had any idea that anything was going on at the university. That is the definition of lack of constitutional control of your program. The athletic department is not separate from the university, not any university in this country. It falls under the purview of the athletic director is the first line of defense, and then it goes up all the way to the chancellor and the president, or however they set up their things. Norton said previous staff demonstrated an unwillingness to even pretend to follow the rules. Asked about recruiting penalties that will impact the current staff, Norton said, the NCAA is concerned with protecting players, but not necessarily with restrictions that may affect the ability of recruiters going forward. When Tennessee said it was firing Pruitt, athletic director and Hall of Fame former coach Phil Fulmer also announced his retirement. Danny White was hired as AD soon afterwards and has revamped almost the entire athletic department, which is something that should be done. And the reason that they fought so hard for this, because with Josh Heupel, they are coming off an 11-2 season with the program's first campaign since 2007 with double-digit wins. The Volunteers won the Orange Bowl and have significant momentum headed into 2023. Won the Orange Bowl, received the payout from the Orange Bowl. I just can't believe some of the things that it's all it was the coach. The coach did not have control of his program. Who has control of the coach? It's pretty simple. The athletic director has control of the coach. And to be really honest, the president and the chancellor, or however it's set up, has control of everything. A couple of others outside Tennessee and talking about this. The failure at Tennessee was culture. It was the failure of all stakeholders to embrace shared responsibility of monitoring and compliance and to create a culture where that responsibility was prioritized and rewarded. They cannot simply be responsible of the compliance staff, institutional leadership, athletic leadership, coaching staff, recruiting staff. All must buy into the shared goal and meet their obligations to promote compliance. This did not happen at Tennessee. Although administrative leaders at every level established and communicated compliance expectations for their staff, those expectations were entirely disregarded by the football program, and the culture of the football program was such that staff members felt they could break the rules with impunity. Not only did the football staff members put their own careers at risk by violating fundamental NCAA legislation, but they also jeopardized the eligibility of numerous prospects and enrolled student-athletes and even involved prospects and student-athletes' family members in the violations. To the extent that many of the violations in this case took place during the COVID-19 recruiting dead period, the staff actions also threatened the health and safety of all involved and created a competitive advantage over other institutions that complied with the dead period restrictions. Simply put, the conduct in this case was entirely unethical to the collegiate model. But everything was okay because they fired the coach. I think that is the pure language of not having institutional control of your program. And one of the reasons that it didn't, I think, get to that point is because it was just the football program. But that's not good enough, folks. Because just the football program and the amount of money generated by the football program runs athletic departments in this country. As good as NCAA basketball and NCAA women's basketball and all the rest of the sports are, the money maker in the NCAA is college football, especially Power 5 college football. And at its present state, Power 5 college football, with the issues that we have with what we just talked about, the issues that we had at Northwestern, with now both the baseball team and the football team, and not having institutional control over their own players, not doing things to other players, and more, there has to be some kind of revamping on how that is. I am not a big fan of the NCAA. I think the NCAA, when it was first put in place, did a good job, but their constitutional control over the Power Five conferences, I think, is in jeopardy because of the amount of money that the Power Five conferences bring into the NCAA. I think the whole system needs to be changed. I think it needs to be rearranged. And you have all these things. And this is the part. The whole thing of this university, Tennessee, on why they shouldn't be facing more penalties where they didn't want to penalize the student athletes. But at the same time, they go and have another press conference. And no matter how much you pay your coaches, your coaching staff, and how much money the university makes off of sports, in no particular fashion should student athletes be able to get paid some amount of money for the work that they do for the university. It's a broke system. You hear every day more college administrators and coaches not trying to help and further and broaden their student athletes. They just keep trying to keep them under their control. And it's something that I just can't stand back and listen and let this stuff happen. And even though Coach Pruitt did not get paid whatever of his last 3 years, he still got paid $12 million. He got paid $12 million out of the part of it that he got to not have any control over his football program. I don't know right off the top of my head how much Coach Pat Fitzgerald makes at the University of Northwestern. I guarantee you it was over $8 million a year. That's that amount of money for Northwestern after a 1-10 season and not having control of all the student athletes and leaving them in harm's way. But we have every old school person out there who still believes in all this saying that these student athletes, I saw one today. If a student athlete gets to a certain amount of NIL money, then he should have to give up his scholarship money and he should have to pay to go. Are you kidding me? He or she is not getting paid NIL money just happenstance. The more that they take, I mean, I go back. Now, do I think there are universities and in Power Five that are abusing NIL by pretty much just paying players to play? Yes. Do I have a problem with that? Yes. Is the problem getting rid of it? No. The problem is you have to be able to control it. And the thing that happened was they kept fighting it. And finally, people just said, no, this is going into effect. Deal with it. And we're still not dealing with it. The biggest problems that some of these universities are having, and we happen to be in a state that our two universities are doing it the right way with collectives and doing all that. The NCAA thinks collectives are illegal. There's so many different things that we can do to help our student athletes not taking a lead and trying to figure out things instead of going to other people, Congress, state legislatures and all that, trying to take care of these issues instead of just sitting down at a table and figuring it out. The other problem that I was getting ready to say is a lot of the money that these Power Five universities are getting, they get from their TV contracts. And the TV contract dollars are huge. You're looking at ESPN and Disney and CBS and ABC is part of the ESPN, Disney, all that. NBC, Fox, where we are at as a country now financially and where we are at with all the different things, they're not going to be able to pay these huge, the SEC and the Big Ten, the television contracts and the amount of money. You know, you're looking from $25 million to $35 million to $45 million per team. Is there anybody out there that really thinks that's going to happen now? When you look at all the things that are happening at ESPN, if you look at all the things that are happening with some of the cable companies, all of that, there's not that much money out there. There's not that much money out there to divide between these schools. And something's got to break. I mean, when I said yesterday that the ACC was happy that they got their TV contract and they're going to be on CW, and it was an amount of money, but it's not what the others were offering. And you kind of go, it's CW. Well, the really funny thing is, until maybe they start paying the amount of money to program collegiate sports or try something else in athletics, there's no mention of CW having financial problems. Disney's issue that they have in the purchase of ESPN has caused them, because now you're talking Wall Street, now you're talking value of your stock, and it is nosediving. Disney alone is nosediving. Disney today stated that, you know, Star Wars and Avengers and all these things, we can't afford to make more movies. Our bottom lines, the figures that are out there, our bottom lines don't work. None of it works. And the amount of money that some of these, I hate calling them talking heads because I'm a talking head, but some of their programming that they had and the amount of money that these individuals were making didn't make sense on the amount of listeners. Now, there's some, they're rock stars. Mike Greenberg is a rock star. But if he gets to 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, I don't know what he makes. He could make more than that. There comes a point where there's no break-even point for ESPN. And now they're suffering. I've listened to their shows for the past 2 weeks after all of this happened. And it's not good. It is definitely a drop-off, and I have no idea what they're going to do. You're listening to Steen on Sports. We're bringing sports your way every day right here on 101.3 1700, the Champ Real Sports. Welcome back in, everybody. Last segment of this first hour on this Friday. You're listening to Steen on Sports. We're bringing sports your way every day right here on 101.3 and 1700, the Champ Real Sports Talk for real sports fans. This segment is going to be brought to you by 4 Homeless Veterans, a golf outing with Central Iowa Shelter and Services, Monday, July 31st at the Legacy Golf Club in Norwalk, Iowa. By participating in this event, you are supporting a mission to provide homeless veterans an opportunity to grow, rebuild, and get whole again. The fundraised helped to maintain all 150 beds at the emergency shelters and provide street outreach, very important, and cooking 600 nutritious meals each day. For many of our veterans, these services are their first steps towards stability and self-sufficiency. It's an important thing, and it dives pretty deep in my heart and in my causes. With Melissa, Eric Mangels is the reason that, and Melissa, that we are talking about this on our show because of our mutual respect for them and for them to us with Scott and I. You can be a whole sponsor. It costs $250 to be a whole sponsor. You can come in and play golf. It's a 4-man best ball. Teams, it's $600 for a team of 4, includes 18 holes with a golf cart, banquet meal, 2 drink tickets, player raffle prizes. You can do both if you want to be a whole sponsor and you want to get a team in, you can pay $800. It saves you $50. I hope that you take that $50 and donate it right back into them to really try to help and help continue everything that Central Iowa Shelter and Services is doing, because it's quite amazing. And if you ever want to go on a tour and go down and see what they're doing, I know Melissa would be happy to show you around. I would be happy to show you around. I know I could get Eric down there to get you to show you around. And once you're there and once you see what they're doing and how much help they need, even though they're doing an outstanding job, I think you'll buy in and you'll be as excited as we are for this and for Central Iowa Shelter and Services and for our veterans. Join us in serving those who serve for us. That should say it all right there. But you get all the added. You get to play golf. You get to have some fun. You get to play at Legacy, one of the best courses to play in town, especially if you're playing four-man best ball. It's a lot more fun than it is sometimes if you're playing by yourself. So it's not overly difficult. I mean, it's not ruthless difficult, but it's a difficult course and a lot of fun. Once again, Central Iowa Shelter and Services and four homeless veterans golf outing Monday, July 31st. Okay, just a couple of things, and I love this one here with the. They are getting ready to have Swarm, the Iowa Swarm, vodka. They have their beer already, now vodka. And my buddy David Eicholt, this is his quote today: Iowa's going to drink themselves into a 5-star roster with the 25% that they're getting from sales. Okay. And here's my thing, because I have people ask me that all the time. You know, to get to a 4- and 5-star roster, and can you do that in the state of Iowa? And I think you can do that in the state of Iowa. And somebody, you can call in and say, I think weather has a play in that. I mean, when you look and you're in Alabama and you're in Tennessee and you're in some of those places, now Michigan and Ohio State kind of knock this in your head because they don't have perfect weather during the wintertime either. It just seems sometimes the Midwest and the weather in the Midwest isn't, you know, it's just not everybody's cup of tea. You know, getting 5 to 10 five stars from California or Arizona or from the West Coast every few years when they have to come here and they see what cold and snow is like. I've said all along, I love being here. I love doing the show. I love being here. I love where I work. I love all that. My 10 days of being in Tennessee and staring at the Smoky Mountains and knowing that their winters aren't like our winters, man, I would move there in a heartbeat. It's just different. And the summers aren't as hot and unbearable as they are here. I mean, just the whole season thing. So, but you know, that I think that's interesting. I think it's a good idea. Not everybody is Alabama or Michigan or Ohio State or Florida State and how their NILs are doing. You have to be able to, you know, look outside the box, check outside the box. And I think that the University of Iowa and the University of Iowa State do a really good job of doing that to try to help our student athletes. And it's kind of cool, and I appreciate that a lot. I wanted to do this really quick. Got about 5 minutes. Also, don't forget, we have B Styles coming up at 5:21. All kinds of stuff to talk about. Haven't talked to B for a while since vacation. Matt Campbell spoke a little bit today about the sports gambling, or yesterday, about the sports gambling situation and how the program is handling it. He didn't have a lot to add because I don't think he knows how it's going to be handled. And today I heard some of the expectations of what you can and cannot gamble. So if you are a collegiate athlete, now I want to preface this. If you are a college athlete and by using somebody else's phone or augmenting your phone, so it if on date of birth and age, if you were sports gambling and you're under the age of 21, you're breaking a law. And I get it. Well, come on. No, but it is. I mean, that's If you get caught, you need to understand that you're going to be punished for it. Here's the part that got me today. So the guidelines, and somebody can text me or say, but this is what I listened to today. The guidelines are to bet in college as a college athlete if the sport that you're betting in has a professional aspect, college football, NFL, NCAA basketball, NBA, women's college basketball, WNBA, college baseball, Major League Baseball. If they have a championship game and you have a championship game, you cannot gamble on that sport. So my thought process has started coming in. And I understand the aspects of gambling, how if unguided could get you into trouble, but gambling on your phone with, let's just use BetMGM, and you're a college football player and you can't bet on the NCAA tournament because the NCAA tournament has a basketball championship and the NBA has a professional championship. Those two things don't line up for me. Now, the part, if they'd have came out and said, you know what, we have this, in even college hockey, there's another one. College tennis, there's another one. Only thing that we figured out today, me and a couple of buddies sat down and went, is if you were betting on MMA, because there's nothing in collegiate that is like that. Now, do I think that you could have issues with people? And somebody also needs to throw up. I throw this out here throw this out. I'm trying to think if I'm assuming sports betting is 21. I didn't think you could sports bet if you're 18. You can't go to Prairie Meadows unless you're 21. And I understand that you could find a dark side to that. That you could be as an NCAA basketball player, and in your place where you live, you have football players and basketball players, and you sit there and you talk about stuff, what happens in practice, and you have inside information. And I get that could be an issue. I also get if they keep track of stuff like this, if the gambling numbers are high. BetMGM doesn't care about me because I don't win enough and I don't bet enough. But if all of a sudden, 2 months from now, I start betting $1,000, $1,500, $2,000 a day, and I'm winning more than 50% of the time, and it starts to look suspicious, I get that. Then you should investigate, and if you have reason or cause that you can go, I think that's fine. And I think people should be punished for it. But to say that someone can't, that a football player at Iowa State or Iowa, or you and I, Drake, wherever, cannot bet on the NCAA basketball, or can't bet on the NBA playoffs, or can't bet on NHL, or can't bet on Major League Baseball, I don't understand that. And especially, I don't understand that when we can't control, I mean, we're trying to over-control that, and we're not controlling these other things that teams are getting death penalties for. And I think that is true because I don't think the NCAA is competent or ready to be able to go out and do that kind of stuff. That's just my thoughts. I apologize for that, but it's just, it doesn't make sense. And that's kind of my barometer. You can tell me something and we can explain it and we can talk about it. If it makes sense, I'm going to listen to you. If it doesn't, I'm not. You're listening to Steen on Sports. We're bringing sports your way every day right here on 101.3, 1700 The Champ. Real sports talk for real sports fans. Second, you are listening to Steen on Sports. We're bringing sports your way every day right here on 101.3 and 1700 The Champ. Real sports talk for real sports fans. You can check us out on Twitter at Steen on Sports and at 1700 The Champ. Facebook's at 1700 The Champ and the website 1700thechamp.com. Minnesota Twins baseball. They're playing the Athletics. It's three games they need to win and win them quickly. 8 o'clock pregame tonight, 5:30 on Saturday, and 3 o'clock on Sunday. Next Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, they're at Seattle. Tougher games, but they still need They need to at least get one, if not two. That's an 8 o'clock pregame as well. This segment of the show will be brought to you by Heritage Building Maintenance. They provide quality health-centric building maintenance and janitorial services throughout Central Iowa and the Midwest. Heritage is future-focused and driven by technology to find a healthier and more efficient way to serve their clients. They believe they should provide the first line of defense and proper health care, be industry leaders in implementing health-focused innovation and technology, provide a peace of mind in protecting our future by being certified partner of science-proven microbial control. Go to heritagebldg.com to check out more about cleaning and the future of janitorial services. I want to say thank you, as always, to Heritage Building Maintenance. Okay, so I found a couple of things that I wanted to talk about. I'm just going to pick some teams here. There was a really cool social media post today about what NFL football teams, if you had three words to describe them, would like to be described by. I'm going to just pick on some ones that we normally do. I'm a Baltimore Ravens fan. Tenacious, fearless, and dynamic. I'm okay with that. I got a couple of Buffalo Bills fans, so unrelenting, electric, and thrilling. I get that. Chicago's close, historic, tenacious, and loyal. Probably not everything that you probably not the three that you need. To, I mean, historic and tenacious. Because of my nephew Kale, I'll do the Cincinnati Bengals. Bold, spirited, and tenacious. I kind of get that. For my buddy T, Dallas Cowboys, iconic, star-studded, and resilient. They're missing that win at all costs, baby. Let's see here. We have Green Bay Packer fans. We'll send this one out to Bridget and Grandpa. Legendary, resilient, and dominant. Okay, that's a word there for you. My oldest Zach, an Indianapolis Colts fan, strategic, disciplined, and persistent. Not exactly all football killer terms there. The team that I feel could have the biggest breakout year, the Jacksonville Jaguars, and I say breakout year because people forget they were 9-8. They didn't start very well, but I think they were still getting the sorry for this Ohio State fans, but the stench of Urban Meyer off. Tenacious, agile, and tenacious. That's a team that hasn't won a lot of football games for a while, that you get tenacious twice. The Kansas City Chiefs. This is the reason the Kansas City Chiefs have been where they've been at the last few years. They're three: explosive, dynamic, unstoppable. Okay, so when you're a football team that has been run into the ground because of your owner, let's say maybe the Washington Commanders, resilient, proud, and determined. That is not cool. The San Francisco 49ers, because of Brock Purdy and this program, tenacious, dominant, and strategic. The Eagles, who almost won the Super Bowl last year, fearless, passionate, and resilient. Aaron Rodgers' New York Jets, persistent, rebuilding, and passionate. They had to put rebuilding in. I thought that was funny. The New England Patriots, if this was 10 years ago, I'd have believed this. Dominant, resilient, and strategic. Minnesota Vikings, ferocious, passionate, and mighty. Yeah. My partner in crime, Mr. Scott, his Miami Dolphins, agile, resilient, and determined. And last but not least, we'll go the Los Angeles Chargers. Electric, resilient, and dynamic. I think the one that fits the best, and we are a Kansas City Chief affiliate, explosive, dynamic, and unstoppable. I'd say in the last 5 years, that's pretty close. I just thought that was a really, really interesting thing. Getting back to Iowa State, they had media days, Big Ten, SEC, the rest of these media days are coming up. I think Matt Campbell, it's a difficult time for Matt Campbell. And here's why it's the hardest thing for an Iowa State Cyclone fan is, in comparisons to other teams, I think what Matt Campbell has done at Iowa State with the way rosters are and recruiting from when he started to now is, I think it's measurably better. I think the biggest problem that Iowa State has, and it needs to get over, and is what happened last year, we have to be better in one-score games. I would hate to see what our record in one-score games are. I know last year that it was not good. I would like to, at first, and this is a criticism. It's probably the only criticism that I'm ever going to say about Coach Campbell. I think in the last 2 to 3 years, his sideline agitated viewpoint of refereeing has overshadowed and not given enough credit to his football team type of mentality. I think he is an amazing leader. I think he's passionate. And I think you can be those two things and get your point across without some of the, and I'm going to call it what my parents would have called when I got in trouble, shenanigans. I think what you've done before, let the players decide the football game on the field, and you have to let the minutiae go away. I think they have made huge steps. And I think that the same thing that has plagued Iowa in the last couple of years, you could say the same for Iowa State. Our offensive capability has not kept up with our defensive stability. I think at times it has. I think the Iowa Hawkeyes will tell you at times they have. But at key moments in time, and I'm a huge, huge defensive guy, our lack of offense and University of Iowa's lack of offense was the reason we had the records that we had last year. Our inability from, and this seems really strange to say, our inability from our 40 to our competitors' 40, we played really, really well. But once we got inside that 40-yard line, our offense changed. Now, I get some of that. You had an inexperienced quarterback, and you didn't have all the weapons, but you still had weapons, but you didn't have all the weapons. I think the biggest thing that we're going to see this year in Iowa State football is the offensive line and how they approach the game. More of not just a blocking scheme, but a blocking just beat down is what I think we're looking for. And I think that was the University of, it was the Hawkeyes. I think that was their issue as well. When their line worked together and blocked scheme-wise like they were supposed to, the Iowa's offense wasn't bad. The reason that the Iowa offense struggled so much was a misplay there, or a misblock here, or a drop pass there. Same could be said for Iowa State. Maybe a penalty, you know, a third and one, we get a penalty. Now it's third and six, and we struggle and we punt. I think having a special teams coach is important. I think having a coach for all your different things is one of the biggest things that you can have. I think having a offensive coordinator with a different style and game plan is going to help in all of this. There are still weapons there, and there are weapons coming. And it's no different than if I was talking about the Iowa State men and the Iowa State Iowa men's basketball programs. A lot of people think the Iowa men's basketball program is going to have a down year. I think if they struggle shooting, they're going to have a down year. If they have an injury to one of their key players, I think they could have a down year. I think expectations for other people coming in, I think expectations of young people without much experience being able to carry you in the Big Ten with some of the people that are coming back to the Big Ten in player-wise for other teams is going to make it difficult. I think Iowa State's issue coming into the season is, once again, the mixture of all the players and how they mesh. Here's something I know for sure. We're more athletic. They're more, I think they have better people at better positions. And I think some of the people that had, you know, maybe not as great a years as they thought, I think they a year under their belt is going to improve. But the athletic ability and the defensive ability, because of that athletic ability and length and size, is going to make a huge difference. And I think the ability to have all five players on the floor being able to shoot, score, drive, defend, all of that is going to get better. And I'm one of those. I'm a huge Taman Lipsey fan. I would not have cared last year if he made a jump shot, because when he was on the floor, we were a better team because of his leadership, because of his defense, and because of getting us in the right situations. He needs to realize that maybe not every game, but in a high percentage, say 60% of the games, he's going to have to hit a couple of jump shots. But I think the people around him and the athletic ability around him is going to change that. Peyton Sanford has to have a great year for the University of Iowa. A great year, a 20-point, 8-rebound, 4-assist kind of thing. Tony Perkins has to have a great year for them to be competitive. And I'm telling you right now, do not be surprised when we take a look back and you say, you know what, Drake's men's basketball is going to be again very good again this year. UNI basketball is going to be better. Another season under their belt. Another growing together. It's going to be a good time. And I think for the Big Ten, this is your grown up year for Iowa in football. It's the last time that you get to play the people that you've been playing for the last 10 years, that the majority of Hawkeye fans, me included, understand on any given Saturday, you're beating that team because you're better than that team. And then you add USC and you add UCLA, that brings more offense into the league. And you're not going, I mean, that's the teams that Iowa have beaten over the years to get them to their 8, 9, and 10 win seasons. They can outscore even with the lack of ability sometimes in their schemes on offense because of their defense being so good and the other team's offense not. Having a new quarterback and having his confidence that he had being at Michigan, it is different being at Iowa than it is at Michigan. That's one of the first things that I said. I'm like, you have got to go out and get him because you need a quarterback. But you have to realize that your offensive line isn't Michigan's offensive line. Your wide receivers are not Michigan wide receivers. Your running backs are not Michigan running backs. Your defense is probably a slightly better defense than the Michigan defense, so that bodes well. But it's not the same weapons, and it's not the same system that he's going to have at Iowa. He's going to have to overcome that. But he's talented. If you watch him flip a ball, he's talented. And he has that capability. I think it's going to be exciting to see, you know, does everybody out there really think over the next 5 years? I know one person does. He lives behind me. His name's John Walling. He thinks Alabama's going to win every year. You get to a point in time where sometimes it's not going to go your way. The SEC is getting more talent. And it's going to be exciting to see what happens with everything changing in college football, with the maneuvering around and the new teams coming in and you know, the SEC and you're adding. I can't wait. If the SEC thinks that having Oklahoma and Texas isn't going to be a big deal, it's a big deal. and you're not, they are going away. They're going to have to play all these games. I mean, it's going to be tough. College football is going to be so, so exciting. I needed to say one thing. I have Bruce Miles. He is coming in on, I think he's coming in on Thursday at 5 o'clock. He has a new book out. The new book is called Chicago Cubs, A Curated History of the Cubs, the Franchise. The foreword is by David Ross. Bruce Miles is going to come in and talk about the book for you Chicago Cub fans out there. Be ready for that. I think it's going to be, I've read some excerpts today from the book. He just sent me my ebook copy so I can go through this and start going through and marking some pages so I got some questions. It's a historical look. It's a future look. It's all of those things, Chicago Cubs. And I know that we have a lot of Chicago Cubs fans in this radio audience and pretty excited about that. Next week, we also have Newton Speedway, IRL coming in. We're going to be doing our show live there on Friday. A bunch of us from radio, Jennifer and I are going on Saturday, Sunday, see the races, see the concerts, a lot to talk about next week. And we'll have some individuals on from there as well. You're listening to Steen on Sports, bringing sports your way every day right here on 101.3 and 1700 The Champ. B Styles coming in. Be right back. In everybody, once again, happy Friday. Weekend's right around the corner for all of us. You're listening to Steen on Sports. We're bringing sports your way every day right here on 101.3, 1700 The Champ, real sports talk for real sports fans. You can check us out on Twitter at Steen on Sports and at 1700 The Champ. Facebook's at 1700 The Champ as well. Minnesota Twins baseball, they're at the Athletics tonight, tomorrow, and Sunday. Next Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, they're at the Mariners. We are a Minnesota Twins affiliate, so looking forward to that. This segment is going to be brought to you by Woodman Controls Company. It's Iowa's intelligent building solution company. Provides, designs, engineers, installs, programs, and services HVAC, lighting, card access, and camera controls. They can fully automate your building and improve efficiency, comfort, and security. Located in Ankeny, Iowa, go to Woodman Controls and find out what they can do for you with this outstanding automation machinery manufacturing company. It's been a while. My buddy B Styles is in here with us today. He is at the B Styles on Twitter. B, how you doing?
Doing good. And, you know, it's kind of like that lull in the week that you have, just like with the All-Star break and everything that was going, and not really a whole lot going on, but now baseball starts back up tonight. You got a talking season, if you will, college football getting underway. And then before you know it, you're going to have training camps with the NFL. And yeah, it's slowly getting there.
let's talk about baseball for a little bit.
Sure.
I've been asking people, because I'm trying to figure it out for myself, but in the four major sports, so hockey, basketball, NFL, actually, if you did five, mm-hmm. NCAA football, and then baseball, where does baseball rank for you, and where do you think baseball is at right now in the country?
Oh, man, that's hard. I mean, it's probably three or four just based on the ones that you mentioned, but I think it's one of those things where they're making efforts in terms of like trying to do what they believe is improve the game. And I do think some things have helped. Like the pitch clock, I don't think it's necessarily a great thing if you're at the game, but if you're watching it on TV, I think it's fine. And like the pace of play, I think it's probably a good thing that the games are for the most part under 3 hours now, but I'm still not over the Ghost Runner thing. That drives me crazy even to this day. But the bigger thing is I feel like what they're not really addressing is it's the amount of time in between innings, if you will, where you have the commercials. And I understand part of that's because you have companies that are paying for the advertisements, but it's one of those things where I think usually it's about 2 minutes in between innings. Like if it's just like a game, it's on a local affiliate, but then if it's like a nationally televised game, it's probably 2.5. I think that's where your issue kind of comes from in terms of the games that were being longer than they were. But it's not going to be something where it's like, well, we're just going to cut the, you know, advertising that comes at the game, because it's one of those things where, like, in the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, I don't think too many – I wasn't alive then, but I wouldn't think that this is something that was being talked about much. It was, oh, my God, these games are way too long, and there's too many ads and all this and all that. Like, it seemed like games, for the most part, were finishing under 3 hours back then. So, you know, you kind of wonder, what were they doing then that was working, and what's happening now that isn't?
We just love baseball, and baseball was really the only thing. I mean, honestly, yeah. I mean, that was the sport. You bring a different perspective to the radio audience here, because you have Chicago ties and now you have Minnesota ties. In those two cities, where do you rank the four major sports in what fans care about most? Let's start with Chicago.
Well,
Illinois, Chicago.
Obviously the Bears are number one in Chicago.
Gotcha.
And I don't think there's any question about that. I think it teeters back and forth between the two baseball teams and the Blackhawks, because you had that stretch where the Blackhawks were winning Stanley Cups, and I think that had everybody's attention. But then, you know, you had the Cubs recently winning in 2016, and even the White Sox winning the AL Central a couple years ago. I think it's really just a matter of who's good at that point. And then it would have obviously been the Bulls, you know, being number
early,
two, if
yeah.
not being number one back in the Jordan and Pippen years. But right now, I mean, they might honestly be five, just in terms of, like, it doesn't appear to be an end in sight in terms of them getting better. Or it seems like that they're reaching their ceiling right now, as far as they're currently constructed. As far as I can tell from being up here in Minnesota, and I've lived up here for a little over a year now, the Vikings are clearly number one up here. And I think that's going to be the case no matter where you are in the country. If there's an NFL team, they're going to be the top billing, except for maybe Los Angeles, just because you have the Lakers there. But here, the Vikings are for sure the most talked about team and the team that gets the most scrutiny. And then I think it's kind of back and forth between the Twins and the Wild. I think part of it depends on if you live in Minneapolis versus if you live in St. Paul, which is where the Wild's arena is. But I also think part of it, too, is just it goes back to what I was saying about Chicago. Is the team winning, and how successful are they? And then I would say the Timberwolves are probably fourth out of those four.
Yeah, that's crazy that both NBA teams would be fourth. But this is hockey area, too, which makes that interesting. Once again, we're talking to Brendan Stiles. He's at DB Stiles. Mm-hmm. On Twitter, for you, and then kind of just maybe your friends and stuff. When you're looking at Justin Fields and you're looking at Kirk Cousins, I get that Justin Fields might have a bigger upside, but is Justin Fields even close to Kirk Cousins right now in being an NFL quarterback?
I think so. Well, you got to realize that they bring different skill sets. I think Kirk is kind of more of like that steady guy, if you will. And I don't know if you've watched on Netflix this week. They just premiered that series called Quarterback, and he's part of that. It's him, Patrick Mahomes, and Marcus Mariota. If anybody hasn't, if you have Netflix and haven't seen it yet, I highly recommend it. I think it's really cool. It's one of those things where I feel like he's kind of like a steady force for the Vikings where, yeah, he's not going to be somebody that, you know, necessarily puts them over the top, but can he be somebody that keeps them consistent and put them in a spot where they could potentially, you know, make that next step? Maybe. Whereas I think with Justin Fields, he has a higher ceiling, and I think a lot of it also has to do with the fact him being younger, he's more mobile. He's a guy that if you get the talent around him, which I feel like Brian Poles has been trying to do here over the last, I won't say just this year, but even with, you know, mid last season with the trade that they tried to do getting Chase Claypool from Pittsburgh, they're making efforts, and now it's just kind of on him to take that next step, if you will. And if he can do that, then you know that you have your franchise guy. I think there's maybe a little more uncertainty in that regard, whereas with Minnesota, they know what they have. And I think now the question for the Vikings would be, okay, how much longer are you going to roll with Kirk Cousins before you decide you need to take that leap of faith and go for your next guy and go for his successor?
The one thing that Kirk Cousins is that I don't think people give a lot of credit for, but I've started to see some this week when you start looking at numbers, he might be the best businessman in the NFL, because every turn that he's had and the type of contract that he's gotten out of all of that,
mm-hmm.
he's made a lot of money in the NFL. Not that he's had a bad career, but it's just been career. But, man, he's made a lot of money.
And if I'm not mistaken, didn't he have the first contract that was fully guaranteed?
Absolutely. I mean, that.
Yeah, there you go. I think that's a big part of why, you know, what you said would be accurate. I think that's one of those things, too, where I feel like if you're him, it's kind of an interesting dynamic, because I'm sure he wants another deal that maybe gives him 3 or 4 more years. Or is, if you're the Vikings, I think it was the last year in his current contract, where if you're Minnesota, it's like, okay, this is your last year on this contract. This might be like a prove-it year for him, because if it's something where he does take a step back, maybe that does give them pause and think, okay, maybe we need to consider drafting a quarterback. Now, I don't think they're going to be in a position to get like a Caleb Williams or Drake May, but they could be in a position to get somebody, you know, that he could eventually groom to be his successor, if you will, and be somebody that maybe holds a clipboard for, you know, a year, if not 2 years, and it ends up being something where maybe they do bring back Cousins on like a 2-year deal. But again, my understanding is he wants like a 3 or 4 year deal, because he's probably looking at it as that's going to be when his career ends, and he wants to get the most that he can now, because to your point, he was successful in doing that when he was at Washington, and then being able to get the contract that he got here in Minnesota.
And the one thing that I think people don't understand to a certain extent is there's half the NFL that don't have stability at quarterback. And if Kirk mm-hmm. Cousins comes out on the open market, there are teams that are going to line up and try to get him, because no matter what you think, and maybe he costs you a couple of games, but he's won the Vikings a lot of games too. I just don't think that he gets the credit for when he has a great game and they win, but he gets all the blame when maybe it isn't all his fault. And some of that was coaching and other things. I just think he's misunderstood.
I think part of that too is just the fact that he actually had some talent around him. I mean, absolutely. I know Dalvin Cook's no longer there, but they had him. They have Justin Jefferson, who you could argue is one of the top receivers in the game.
That's not a bad game to have.
They drafted Jordan Addison. They have T.J. Hockenson. Obviously, everybody back in Iowa would know him well. I feel like that's been there for him, and it's just a matter of, okay, can the Vikings, if you're them, can they do more than just win a playoff game? Because he did that in 2019, but then they lost the next week to San Francisco. And then last year, they have that season, they win 13 games, but they lose a wild card round at home. And the big play at the end of that game is the fact that he threw it short of the sticks and Hockenson wasn't able to get that first down. And I think it's kind of those decisions that linger, if you will.
Absolutely.
And I'm sure it's something where he probably knows that it wasn't the best decision, but from his perspective, and I think he mentioned it in that series, is it was either that or he's going to take a sack. And at that point, it's like, okay, well, then the O-line had to do a better job of protecting him. But, you know, it's one of those things where they maybe have a window still, but I don't know how much of a window it is. And even if they do win the NFC North again, I'm not sure that they're a team, like if you compare them to, say, Philadelphia or San Francisco, I definitely wouldn't say they're better than either of those teams.
A couple more. Once again, we're talking to Brendan Stiles. He's at TheBStiles on Twitter. Scott and I talked a little bit this week about some of the things happening at the University of Iowa and with the new athletic mm-hmm. director coming in and some changes and just the overall aspect of college athletics. With the new athletic director coming in the next, let's say the next 3 years, next 3 to 5 years, mm-hmm. are the coaches that are currently there, are all of them still there, half of them still there, a third of them still there?
I think Brands will for sure still be there at Iowa. I don't see him going anywhere anytime soon. Bluder, she just signed an extension, so I would think that she would still be around.
She's got at least two, because right. Caitlin has two.
Right, and then that basically it kind of boils down to Fran and Kirk. Yeah. And I guess if you wanted to include Rick Heller in there, I would imagine he's not going anywhere. So,
not unless somebody comes and pays him a lot of money.
Exactly. So it basically boils down to Kirk Ferentz and Fran McCaffrey. And Kirk, even with his age, I don't get the sense that he wants to step away anytime soon, just because it's this is what he does. I guess if I were to put money on it, not that I would recommend that necessarily, but if I had to make a guess, I think it'd probably be more likely that they make a change of basketball before they would make a change of football. And that's not the knock for Ann McCaffrey by any means, but I think it's he's going to be at an interesting point, not just in his coaching career, but with his life.
Right.
Because Connor's no longer there. Patrick's going to be a senior. He does have Jack, but it, from all accounts, Jack doesn't want, it doesn't sound like he wants to play at Iowa. So if he goes elsewhere, is it going to be something where Fran's going to want to continue? And I believe they have a daughter as well. Is it going to be something where by the time all his kids are out of high school, is he going to want to keep doing it? And I think that that's a question that he would have to answer. But I think part of that too is the consistency that they've been able to show, at least with making the NCAA tournament. I feel like that standard's been set, and it's something that they got. He's got to be able to continue doing. Otherwise, he is going to get closer to that hot seat if, let's say, they have a down year, they have a couple of down years.
Just one more on football, and I know we're going to talk more about it, but just at first glance, it's one of those make-or-break years for them because of how things are going to change when you bring in USC and UCLA. A good expectation for Iowa football wins for you would be?
I'm going to say 9. I think that should be the bar.
Nine going to get them in the championship game against the other side?
That's the question. It could, just because of the West. Like I feel like when you look at the other teams in the West, I'm not sure any of those others could get to 9 wins. And where, so that could very well be the mark that if they get there, that's what gets them to Indy. But would it be something where I would put them like on the same playing field as a Michigan or Ohio State or even Penn State? No, I wouldn't. But I think that the Penn State game is probably not going to go well. But aside from that, every other game on their schedule is winnable. And I would even say the Wisconsin game is winnable, just mainly because there's going to be such a dynamic change with their offense going from what they've always been under Barry Alvarez and Bielema and Paul Christ, and now they with Phil Longo being the offense coordinator for Luke Fickell, they want to go more air raid. And that might be something that takes the time for Wisconsin to adjust, especially when they have a running back like Braylon Allen. So this only amplifies this being a big opportunity for Iowa to take that step to get back to Indianapolis this year.
And it's a big year as well. B, love it. Thanks for getting back in here with me. We'll talk to you next week.
Absolutely. Talk to you next week.
Thanks to B. You are listening to Steen on Sports, bringing sports your way every day right here on 101.3 1700 The Champ. Buddy, last segment of this Friday. You're listening to Steen on Sports. We're bringing sports your way every day right here on 101.3 and 1700 The Champ, Real Sports Talk for real sports fans. Twitter at 1700 The Champ and at Steen on Sports. Facebook at 1700 The Champ. Website 1700thechamp.com. You can listen to our live programming. You can get Minnesota Twins baseball. Just go on the website or the app, 1700 The Champ app, and you can listen to our live shows. I also will have I'll have the podcast up. I'll either do them tonight or tomorrow morning. So I'll have Thursdays and Fridays up. All the rest of them are up. You can always get those wherever you get your podcasts. I upload them into Audio Boom, but you can get them anywhere. We are a Minnesota Twins affiliate. So we have Minnesota Twins baseball Friday, Saturday, Sunday. They're playing the Athletics. They need to get those wins. Very, very important weekend for them. I'm popping up the standings right now. So the Minnesota Twins are 45-46. They're a half a game out. The Central Division has are bunched up a little bit. The Mariners are 45-44, and the Athletics are 25-67. They need those three games. They need no worse than splitting on the road. It'd be great to get It would be great to get 5 out of 6 of these. It's very important. So keep those Twins right up there. And give them some love this weekend. As always, I want to thank the sponsors of our show. 4 Homeless Veterans Golf Tournament at the Legacy Golf Club, Monday, July 31st, put on by Central Iowa Shelter and Services for our homeless veterans who need our help. Let's give it to them. It's a fun event. You get to play at Legacy, one of the best places to play, especially I love playing four-man best ball there because it's just it's an interesting course on how you can dissect when you have options. And I want to thank Northwest Bank, Woodman Controls, and Heritage Building Maintenance for being a part of the program. Before I jump into a couple of other things, two different articles I got sent to me today because I've talked about these two players a lot. And I believe that they're two of the most maligned players in professional sports for reasons unbeknownst to me and more because of their respective teams have placed burden on them for where they're at and not burden on themselves. And at their peak and at their best, Kyler Murray from the Arizona Cardinals and Trae Young from the Atlanta Hawks are two of the best at their sport at what they do. Scoring, assists for Trae Young, touchdown passes, ability to move around in the pocket, ability to get yards with your legs with Kyler Murray. I believe that they both have struggled with subpar coaching at times. I think they both have digressed because of coaching to a certain extent and players that are put around them. I also think that 35% of their negativity they have outside of their locker rooms and maybe inside their locker rooms has a lot to do with their, I'm trying to think of a good word, and the only word that I can come up with is immaturity. Immaturity has been a downfall of a lot of great athletes. And when you take a look at some of those great athletes, you know, the ability to, the things that you look for most out of some of your great players. Now, some are so, I mean, Kobe and Michael and Larry and LeBron and, you know, baseball, everybody. They're you know, Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers. They have the ability to get their point across with their teammates and the fans and still stay above ground in likability. For some reason, these two guys can't and don't. And I'm trying to figure out what could help and what could make them better. I think a change of scenery for both of them is needed to get their full potential. I don't know if that's going to happen, but on a team that has other proven scorers and proven defenders, I think that's Atlanta's biggest problem with Trae Young. His offensive capability is unmatched, his dribbling, but his defense is not great. And Kyler Murray is small-ish for a quarterback and struggles with turnovers. I just keep an eye on those two. I don't even know if Kyler Murray is going to get to play at all this year, and I don't know if Trae Young is going to be on that Atlanta Hawks team, which would be a shame. 19 years ago today, the L.A. Lakers traded Shaquille O'Neal to the Miami Heat. Shaq guaranteed that he was going to bring Miami their first NBA championship. In 2005, he was second in MVP, and in 2006, the Heat won the NBA Finals. The L.A. Lakers eventually moved on and have gotten a world championship as well. It got to a point where Kobe and Shaq just didn't work, and that was too bad. But it was interesting. That was 19 years ago today. I thought this was interesting, too. There's some really good teams on here. No BCS or New Year's Six Bowl wins, Power Five schools since 2007. So 2007, some of these I was shocked by. This gives you some that were the biggest. Notre Dame has not had a BCS or New Year's Six Bowl game win since 2007. The University of Miami. UCLA Bruins. Nebraska, Minnesota, Colorado, Missouri, Syracuse had some good teams and did not. Maryland had a couple of good teams. I think the shocking ones, I mean, if you really look at them, the shocking ones are Notre Dame, the University of Miami, and UCLA. They've been close, especially in the last couple of years. It's very interesting that that is out there. I thought this was interesting as too, because I'm kind of looking at Major League Baseball as we speak right here. Before the season, the Cincinnati Reds were plus 1,800 to make the playoffs. The Reds are now plus 105. So if you had that plus 1,800 and you bet on your Reds, you bet $100, hey, holy buckets. You got some, I think that is a given that they make the playoffs. They are 50-41. They're 9 games over. That puts them, there's 1, 2, 3, 4. There's 4 teams ahead of them. And they have youth, they have experience, they have pitching, they have defense. It's going to be quite interesting to see how that all turns out, because I think that's a pretty big deal. This was the one that I got sent today that I've been debating on all day long. And it is, in the Western Conference, who's a better point guard? Ja Morant or De'Aaron Fox? Ja Morant plays for Memphis. De'Aaron Fox plays for the Sacramento Kings. If I had to look at those two teams and see who I think is going to have a bigger year this year, I think the Sacramento Kings are. I think they've made themselves a better team. I like De'Aaron Fox. I don't know if De'Aaron Fox is as flashy, or I don't know if he has the ceiling that Ja has. De'Aaron Fox has no issues. He has no off-the-court issues. As far as my knowledge is, he has no teammate issues. Ja's kind of all over the place. This is a grown-up year for Ja Morant. And if he doesn't grow up, there's a good chance that Ja Morant may not play basketball this year. It's really funny, because two of the biggest stars that have fallen off the cliff a little, one because of outside activities, the other for everybody questioning his love of basketball, and that's Ja Morant and Zion Williamson. I mean, those are two of the most exciting players that you can watch in the NBA when healthy and when right. They do unbelievable things. Ja's problem is he can't control himself off the court. And Zion's problem is he doesn't do enough to keep his body good enough to be on the court. If those two individuals could turn around their negative points of basketball, which isn't really hard to do, Ja, you just need to put the NBA as number one on your list, and everything else is like 10 through 20. And for Zion, you need to take better care of your body. And if those two things could happen, they might be the two most dynamic players going forward. And I don't see it happening, because I don't know if they can control what they do. You're listening to Steen on Sports. We're bringing sports your way every day right here on 101.3 and 1700 The Champ. Real sports talk for real sports fans. I appreciate being in with us this week. We're back next week. Scott's here Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Big week plan. Indy Speedway, all kinds of stuff going to happen. Chicago Cubs book.